Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Goat Torture Theater. No, okay. It's not. It's not. We don't hurt animals here. We eat them, but we don't hurt them. Erie House, well, some of us do. Erie House Radio, I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here with...
Dave Bigley from Weird, This Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One. And Goat.
And Goat. Yep. We got more car trouble tonight. Gosh, I remember in the 70s having some real beat up cars. I had that 74 Duster. That thing rusted away to nothing eventually, rather quickly. I didn't take good care of it. I had a 71 Impala. That thing was a rolling bomb. I've had a number of what one might call a hoopty. But you could buy those things cheap, and if you had a little know-how, you keep them running for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, that was the thing. Back then, we had very little pocket change, so you had to go with what you could get. And what you could get is usually something that needed a little bit, at the very least, of TLC.
Yep. I would say the best deal I got on a car, a Ford Torino, a Ford Torino. It was like a 70. I want to say that was a 74 also, somewhere around there. You know, not particularly fast. It already had the catalytic converter. Damn it. I think I paid $300 for it. And a year later, I got like $200 for it. So, and I probably only put maybe $100, $150 into it to keep it rolling. Not too bad for early 80s.
I know you weren't crazy about the catalytic converter, but it did really kind of save the Dodge, because Dodge had such horrible carburetors.
Oh, yeah.
So, yep. You know, it probably saved Dodge from going out.
Yeah.
And they didn't used to be so bad. I don't know what is going on that it would have changed throughout the years. But earlier on, they were good. They were good cars. And then all of a sudden, once you got into the late 60s, early 70s, they got carburetors of crap.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you kept up with them, you had some mighty powerful cars from Chrysler in those periods too. You had the Hemi, big engine, like 426 cubic inches or something like that, 427 maybe. Big cars, and then you got a four barrel. You got about 4 miles to the gallon when you floor that thing.
Mm-hmm.
those were the days, and radiators freezing and splitting and all kinds of fun stuff in Ohio winters here. But we got different kind of problems today for you.
Well, yeah, we got a different kind of car trouble, but there is car trouble indeed. Coming to us from our good friend Sam Spade and then our not so good friends, but the good stories from, and this one is a, if you like the 10-year-old car from the Theater 5 yesterday, you're going to love this one. This is a lot more. This is a very interesting story, how this one comes about. So you're going to get Devil Dust.
From Theater 5, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very interesting tale, and I'm looking forward to sharing that one as well.
Loves,
I mean,
we
you can't go wrong with Howard, and you can't go wrong with Howard Duff as Sam Spade. So, you know, we got it made tonight. Two great shows that taste great together, you know?
That taste great together. Mm-mm. Quite a snack. Like deviled eggs. Whatever.
And you know what else we have, Dale? We have another well-researched that I made up tale from Ugg the Caveman.
Uh-oh. Is it a sneak preview of sorts?
You had a sneak preview last night, but this is the full research that I made up episode.
Perfect. So UGG returns. We got a lot of fun for you tonight.
It is a preview for the
might call in. Hello there, CWC in the chat. And Fogsbane joins us along with good old Bob, who's been hanging out since we rolled in here.
You're right. It is a preview for the upcoming UGG's upcoming book. Yes.
Ah, yes. Waiting with bated breath for the coming.
Have you thought about a breath mint?
No, I don't. I don't believe in them.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Called a Winston Light. Oh, gee, there's your breath mint. Oh, that's horrible. That's awful.
Oh, my.
Hey, you get old. Nobody wants you anyway. I'm going to just let myself go. Or not.
Oh,
you mean more? All right, so two terrific tales. You want to start off with Sam Spade and save it up for that exciting?
We'll start off with Sam Spade because I'd like to finish it because I really like the story of Devil Dust. So let's go with Sam Spade, who was always a great program. Not the greatest recording tonight, but still a good story. As again, Howard Duff can do no wrong in my eyes, as Sam Spade.
Nah, and this one's got a great title, The Convertible Caper.
And it's another, it's episode number 51, and comes to us from June 15th of 1947. I believe.
Listen now to The Adventures of Sam Spade, starring Howard Duff in The Convertible Caper.
Sam Spade, Detective Agency.
Sam, sweetheart.
Sam, I knew you'd have the courage to come back and face it.
Well, I'm back, Effie. What shall I face first?
You didn't do something else, did you, Sam?
Besides what?
Besides running away with that woman in a stolen car.
You're a little mixed up, Effie. The car was stolen from her.
You mean it was her own car?
Well, not exactly, Effie. You see, she stole it from somebody else, and then somebody stole it from her, and then I got it back for her.
Well, it must have been quite a car to be worth all that trouble.
It wasn't so much the car, Effie, as...
Party? Sam, I don't understand.
Think it over, sweetheart. I'll be right down to dictate my report.
Look at you. Can't you take no for an answer?
And just what do you mean by that, Miss Perrine?
Walmart's on your face.
Wrong again, sweetheart. She said yes, I said no. Hence the scratching.
I knew she was that type the minute she walked into this office. That ankle bracelet and green nail polish.
Green nail polish.
Well, cute colors.
This one goes to homicide, Effie.
Oh, not another murder, Sam.
What else? Two, Detective Lieutenant Dundee from Samuel Spade with license number 127596. Subject, the convertible caper. Dear Dundee, it had been a dull morning, but just before lunchtime, things began to brighten up. Her clothes looked like money, and what they were wrapped around looked even better. She eased herself into the chair I pushed up for her, rattled about $1,000 worth of charm bracelet at me, and after she'd arranged her legs, mouth, and eyes to our mutual satisfaction, she allowed me to hear the sound of her beautiful voice.
I do not know whether you will be interested in my case or not, Mr. Spade.
Put your mind at rest, Miss
Estrada.
Miss Estrada.
Who knows? Perhaps I am merely a waste of time.
My time is your time, as you stay in the States, Miss Estrada.
Oh, you are very sympathetic, very kind.
Yes.
Entonces, my automobile has been stolen.
When and from where?
Last night, after midnight, while I was checking in at the Hotel San Rafael, where I am staying. I foolishly left it parked outside with the keys in it.
Have you reported this to the police?
No.
I suggest you do.
No.
No?
No.
Well, why not?
Because I stole it from another.
Oh, I see.
No, but you do not yet know all. If the police find the card and notify the one from whom I stole it, then that one will know that I am in San Francisco.
And that's bad.
Ah, it must be bad. If he finds out I am in San Francisco, then he will come here and kill me. That is why I must recover the car rapidly and without the police. You will be glad to help me.
Be very pleasant, Mrs. Strada, but hot cars are not exactly in my line.
You wish that I...
don't think anybody would murder you just for stealing his car.
Oh, not for the car, no. Already he tried to kill me once, twice, three times. So I take the car and drive away rapidly.
Away from where?
Mexico State of Chihuahua, where this pig resides who wishes to murder me.
Why?
He drinks. He becomes a beast. He accuses me of... Look, look here on my shoulder, the scar. Where already he cuts me with a knife. Uh-huh. Now you have seen something that changes your mind about me, huh? You see that I am sincere.
Why, Mrs. Strada, I never had any doubts.
Oh, please. I am without friends. You will call me Mitch, okay?
Yes, indeed, Mitch.
Bueno, now we are friends. In the car is sitting the pig.
Hmm. Hey, what's this pig's name?
Pig is the only name I will honor him with. Pig. Pig.
Mm-hmm. Now, what make of car is it?
Leonza. You know this kind of car?
Yeah, it's a foreign car. I've seen a few around. This must have set the pig back several thousand bucks.
Huh, he steals everything. Listen, my darling, please notice. Around here is pink with blue fenders.
Not anymore. That's the first thing a car thief changes, the paint job. Any other distinguishing marks?
Distinguishing marks? Yeah. I would think. It has a radio.
You don't say.
Uh-huh. And it has two windshield wipers.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll buzz around, Meacher. If I find anything, I'll let you know. My fee is...
Yes. Yes, that is something else. I have no money.
Oh, that's great. That's just great.
But I am sincere. You said so. Look, my darling, keep this. It is worth very much. See? This little charm alone. Platinum set with diamonds. Worth very much. You will keep it until I pay you, eh? Adios, Carlos. Hasta la vista.
She thrust the charm bracelet into my hand, bit me on the ear, and departed. I put a Band-Aid on it, ran some cold water over my head, poured myself a stiff slug of bourbon, and examined the bracelet. The dangle, she pointed out, was a white metal disc with a monogram in diamonds. Two vertical bars with a horizontal one on top. This is the Greek letter pi or the initials PT, depending on who had stolen it from whom. I knew it was at least worth my fee. I dropped it into my pocket and went out. My first stop was over on Mission. The sign on the building says, Masterpiece Auto Painting, Joe Rembrandt, proprietor.
Sam, long time no see.
Hello, Joe.
Got something you want painted?
No, but I think you may have painted something I want.
Sam, you know me. They drive them in the front. We spray the paint on them and push them out the back. No questions asked.
That's quite a turnover, Joe.
Yeah, we're going big time. Got the exclusive now for the syndicate work in the hill.
Is that right?
Yeah. What are you looking for, Sam? A murder car?
Could be. It's a custom job. Foreign car. Deonza? Hey, here's what it looks like.
Yeah. Convertible. Sure, come in this morning. Two-color job.
Which two colors?
Canary yellow body, baby blue fenders. Yeah, quite a car, Sam. Quite a snazzy heap.
Heap, huh?
Yeah. Is that what you want to know?
It was. Happy Herman Heap was one of the biggest used car thieves in the city. As I got off the streetcar in front of Happy Herman's lot, a flash of canary yellow paint caught my eye. I strolled down between the rows of cars and found him.
Yes, sir. Heap's the name. Happy Herman Heap. Every car on this lot is in perfect mechanical condition. Take your choice.
Kind of hard to choose, Herman. There's so many here.
Yes, yes, sir. It takes a heap of heaps to make a heap of heaps.
Yeah. That yellow job with the blue fenders there?
Yes, sir. But the motor in that car, it does need some work. Now, over here...
Does it run?
Yes, it'll run. But over
now,
here...
this is more what I want. Let me try Sounds all right to me.
Oh, idling, yes. But needs some work in the transmission or the differential.
Mind if I drive it around the block?
Well, the mechanics are just about to work on it. Besides, I'm afraid this car is more than you'd care to invest.
Well, let me try it out anyway. Here, I'll leave a deposit. I reached in my pocket for Meech's charm bracelet. He took one look at it, and his expression changed.
Well, why didn't you say so? No deposit is necessary. The car's yours. Drive it as far as you like.
Thank you, Herman Heath. I took him at his word. I put the magic bracelet in my pocket, drove back to O'Farrell Street, parked in front of the San Rafael Hotel, slipped the doorman a buck to wash it for me, and went on into the lobby. The desk clerk said that Senorita Estrada had checked out 30 minutes before, leaving no address. I found the house deck in the bar and asked him for a rundown.
Yeah, I remember her, Sam. Very nice dish.
Any callers, Tiny?
Yeah, two guys. Huh? She went out when they came. They've been back since.
Who were they?
You won't believe it, Sam. One of them was Tom Carey.
What's he doing in San Francisco? He's wanted for murder.
And I don't know, but there must be plenty in it if you brought him back across the border.
He's staying here?
Yeah. Room 613.
Do me a favor, will you, Tiny?
Anything at all, Sam.
There's a car parked outside in the loading zone here. Store it in the hotel garage for me, will you? Upstairs, as far out of sight as you can get it. I went upstairs and rang the buzzer at room 613. The door was opened by a little dark-complected man with hard eyes and Indian features. There was a mean-looking knife in his hand, but he put it away at a nod from Tom Carey.
How'd you find out I was in town?
Not from Meacher.
I don't know how much he told you, Sam, but if he told you this much, he was 11. It's a million-dollar caper. And you know some of the things I've done for less.
What's in it for me?
What'd she pay you?
Nothing. She left this charm bracelet in Hawk.
Now, boss, I caught him now.
Shut up, Parker. Give me that bracelet.
Watch it, Tom. Don't crowd me. I got something bigger than this or you wouldn't be here.
All right, Sam, what do you want?
I want to hear you talk.
I guess you know I've been down Mexico, eh?
I'm listening.
I got a little business down here, garage business.
Running hot cars across the border in the state?
We cool them all. Little body work and a serial number, like plastic surgery.
Sounds like a good business. You shouldn't be neglecting it.
You met the dame.
She says you want to kill her.
I was off my trot. I scared her. I didn't mean anything. I thought I could scare her into sticking around. I let Parko nick her shoulder a little bit.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah. I figured her wrong. I know that now. If I could see her for 5 minutes just to talk to her, I know it'd be okay.
I can't help you, Tom. I want to talk to her myself.
Listen, she hasn't got a penny, only that car. She figures I'm peddling that.
Not anymore.
She already sold it?
Some car thieves took it. She hired me to trace it.
Listen, yeah. Maybe broke in a strange country, I'd look good to her again. Here's $1,000, Sam.
Oh, this is so sudden, Tom.
Nothing. When you see her again, give her that bracelet back, eh? Yeah? It was a present from me. And whatever you do, don't find their car.
Okay, Tom, it's a promise.
Thank you.
Only one thing I don't understand. You said it was $1 million caper.
I meant that. She's worth $1 million to me, Sam.
The girl, Tom? Or the car?
Oh, I wish you hadn't asked that question, Sam. I really do.
Nice little crowd here. Snowman James joins us as well in the chat live. Thanks for joining us, folks. For Sam Spade.
Yep, got it. Nice Saturday crowd. Glad to see everybody here.
Yes. Yeah. Don't know if you celebrated it or not, but tomorrow, Easter. Hope you're having a nice day planned for tomorrow. And
yeah, I'm going to work.
are you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Person I had in needed the day off. Something about cooking for 20 people, something like that. So,
Dave is always working. It's amazing. Amazing.
But,
works
okay.
On cars, too.
Yeah, well, not my specialty, but I can do a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I used to do a lot more when the cars were a lot simpler and easier to get at.
Yeah, now they're that's the thing about cars today. Most of them, they don't really have mechanics anymore. My buddy's dad could listen to a car and tell you exactly what was wrong with the engine.
Yeah.
But they don't have that now. They don't call themselves mechanics. They call themselves
Auto technicians.
Technician, yeah, because they don't really fix anything. They just replace parts until they find out what's wrong with it.
Yep.
They circuits and circuit boards and fuses and whatever. I mean, we have fuses that would go out, but, you know, everything is so computer-oriented today that it's not like the day of the Yugo where you could tear it apart and put it back together again, you know?
Yep. Those were the days, and those were the cars. And they were cooler looking back then, too, I think, many of them.
Yeah, now when you find a style that kind of picks up, then everybody imitates that style for a while.
Yep. They were doing a lot of retro-looking cars. They tried to make the Mustangs very similar to the old 64, 65 Mustang.
I didn't see many of those, but that's cool.
Remember the PT Cruiser? That was kind of a throwback to the...
That was a throwback, and then Chevy had one that looked a lot like the PT Cruiser, but was a little more up in the back and down in the front, so it looked more like a hot rod type thing.
Yep. Yeah, and some of your high-end cars, Chrysler also put out the Prowler, which was a retro-looking car.
Yeah, Early on, many years ago when they were the Cleveland Indians, many years before that, Omar Vizquel, a guy that was associated with the station, he had a dealership, and Omar Vizquel called that he wanted a Prowler that he had there on, because they only make so many of those, and dealers have to fight to get them. Well, Omar finally talked his wife into letting him buy it, so... So he went to Bill and got his Prowler.
There you go. Then 70,000 for a car was not like your not like 70,000 today. Where's the calculator when we need it?
Hey, he's getting ready for his live show tonight. I talked to him a little earlier today. He sounded a lot better than he did last night when he joined us for a while. And he was excited about getting the night show going. So
that is awesome to hear. So that'll be the Twitches right after we're done at 8 o'clock. But until then, we got a whole lot of radio. Here's some more as we conclude. Sam Spade, the Convertible Caper.
And now back to the Convertible Caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade. When Tom Carey said a million-dollar caper, he meant just that. He'd never risked a rap for less than $100,000, and no dame that ever lived was worth more to him than a hot mink coat. If Nietzsche wasn't the million-dollar package, the car was. I didn't know what was in it. With Tom, it might be diamonds, dope, smuggled Chinese, or just plain money. So I went back to the hotel garage.
Number 1279.
I climbed the long, curving ramp to the second floor and found the canary-yellow De Anza convertible crowded in behind four ranks of cars at the rear of the building. I started to work on it. Nothing in the luggage trunk, nothing under the seats, under the upholstery, and the door panels, nothing anywhere. Then I got Piney Stover, and the two of us went over the second time.
That's a cold lead, Sam.
It's not, I know it's not. Now think, Tiny, what's different about this car?
Well, solider built than most, good body of work. I don't know. Hey, here's something.
What?
There's a hole punched out of this fender over here, about the size of a quarter.
Let me see that.
Yeah, right here. It curves under, see?
Yeah.
What's that you got?
Charm bracelet. Did you say this dangle on here was what was cut out of that fender?
Let me see. It fits. Fits even the curve.
Yeah.
What does it mean, Sam?
The dangle on the bracelet is solid platinum.
Hey, Sam, are you trying to tell me the fenders on this heap are solid platinum?
You got a pocket knife, Fanny?
Yeah. Thanks. It shines. Sam, is this a hot car?
I didn't answer him. I didn't have to. He looked in the gray-white gleam of the bracelet shine or the square of paint I'd scraped off the fender and answered the question himself. Nietzsche's convertible was convertible in more ways than one. It was about the hottest car in San Francisco as of that moment. After I'd left the garage, I tried to phone Tom, but he wasn't in. I had an uncomfortable feeling he was out looking for me. He was. As I stepped out of the phone booth, there was a rush of air past my left ear. A knife stuck in the wood less than an inch west of him. Came out in the street and finally see him duck around the corner into an alley. I ran after him. I collared him and stood him up against the wall.
Let me go. Let me go. I cut you down.
What do you know about that car? What do you know about that car? Come on, talk or you get more of this.
I don't know nothing. They don't tell me nothing.
Where's Meacher?
I don't know. Meacher don't know nothing either. Only Tom and...
Tom and who else?
I don't talk no more.
They cutting you in?
I don't need no cut. The boss, he pays me good. 40 pesos. Sometimes more.
Work for me and I'll cut you in.
I cut you to pieces. The boss treats me good.
Sure, you do all the dirty work. There's any trouble, you'll take the rap.
What means rap?
They put you in a little room and squirt gas in you. You fall dead.
Gas? Tom do this?
He does indeed.
Venga. Come, I take you to see the man. Su nombre es Felix. I think he will be very happy to see you.
The place Paco took me to was about as high on Russian Hill as you can get. The house was old, faced in brownstone, and had a high iron fence around it. On the gate was a nameplate, H.H. Lovelace. When I opened it to go in, I noticed that Paco was no longer with me.
Oh, Mr. Spade, come in.
The gray-haired gentleman who greeted me was wearing a wing collar, a carnation, and a very distinguished air. I could hardly believe it, but he was definitely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, none other than the one and only Happy Herman Heap.
Well, Mr. Spade, I see that you're surprised.
I'm overwhelmed, Mr. Heap.
Lovelace, that is the correct name. For my avocation, I selected my first and second names, the H.H., you know. My full name is Herman Heap Lovelace. About that car, Mr. Spade.
Yeah, about that.
I must own that you outwitted me. I was rather proud of my little device, the disc on the charm bracelet, you know. When you showed it to me at my business establishment, I naturally thought you were authorized to take the car.
Yeah, naturally.
However, I'm not averse to enterprise and a young man, and I'm prepared to pay for my blunder.
You said a million I still couldn't accept, Mr. Lovelace.
Oh, why not?
I was hired to recover that car for my client. It's not mine to sell.
Well, it's certainly not hers.
I don't care whose it is. All I know is that my client's life is in danger, and it has something to do with that car.
Miss Estrada?
Yeah.
Excuse me one moment. Hey, drive.
Hello, Papa.
That's all she said. And she stood there looking at me in that way that made you not care who she was double-crossing or why. Then she turned to Lovelace, alias Herman Heap.
How much does he know?
Alas, everything, I fear.
He has agreed to our terms?
Yes.
Good. I must have my bracelet back now, Sam.
Sure, it's right here in my... I reached in my coat pocket for the charm bracelet she'd given me to keep for it. It wasn't there. It wasn't in any of my pockets. I guessed that it was in one of Paco's pockets. Meacher watched me fumbling, her eyes blazing with anger.
Fool, you have lost it. We are helpless without that.
I thought it was the car you wanted.
Please, one thing at a time. I suggest that we first gain possession of the car.
Yes, Lovelace, you are right. First the car.
Ah, yes. This is the car at last. A princess in vulgar raiment, but still a princess. No royal coach carrying a king to a coronation ever held such riches.
I talk too much.
Oh, I do. Well, take your place at the wheel, Mitcher. We shall drive out of here into a splendid future. After you, Mr. Spade.
No, Mr. Heath. After you.
Ironic, isn't it, that with all my varied interests, I've never learned to drive a car.
That a tubocco, viejo.
You seem kind of shaky, Mitcher. You sure you can handle the car down the ramp?
I'm very good driver, Waffle.
Meacher, stop! Put on your brakes. There's a man coming up the ramp.
He was dead before I got to him. As I leaned over him, I saw the bracelet lying beside his hand. I picked it up and walked back to the car. Meacher and Herman Heap Lovelace were sitting in stony silence, glaring at each other.
Is he dead?
Yeah.
Was the bracelet on him?
I didn't look.
Lovelace, go and frisk him.
Must I? It's very distasteful to me. Come, Mr. Spade.
You fool. We trust this detective. Go on.
Very well.
Get in, Sam. Get in. We leave him here. What's the matter? Is something wrong?
Oh, nothing at all.
Come back here! This is an outbreak! I mean, Rick, come back here, I say!
Please, Hopple, a cigarette.
Sure, sure. Here you are.
Gracias.
De nada.
I saw you pick up the bracelet. I meant that you should share it with me. That is why I gave you the bracelet in the first place. I liked you.
Couldn't have been because you were safe as long as Tom-Tom didn't know where the bracelet was, and if you had to kill somebody for it, it would be me.
Please, querida, what does it matter now? We are together, we have the car, we have the bracelet, and the pig is dead.
That's what worries me.
Oh, surely you do not think I meant to kill him.
Of course not. Your foot just slipped. You stepped on the gas by accident.
Yes, that was it.
It won't stick, sweetheart. Not with me.
But with the police?
My story won't help you. I don't know enough.
Oh? Then I tell you everything. I was with Tom-Tom for a year. I hated him 365 days. I tried to run away. Always that Paco came after and brought me back. Then, Senor Lovelace came with the car. Senor Lovelace had much money, but he could not take it from the country. So he bought, sold platinum. Some he received from refugees who had sent their fortunes abroad in that form. But there was no safe way to get it across the border.
So for a cut, Tom-Tom had the platinum made into fenders and welded onto the car. Why was the bracelet so important?
It was too dangerous for Lovelace to bargain directly. Tom-Tom was to get the money for the platinum and give the little piece of the fender as a token.
Yeah.
Lovelace would know who to give the car to when they showed it to him.
That's why he let me drive the car off the lot, huh?
I don't care, darling, even if you try to steal it. Now we understand each other, no? You are tough, too. Tougher than Tom-Tom, I think.
Well,
Now we have everything for ourselves, you and me. What do we care for the others, huh?
You make a good pitch, sweetheart. You look beautiful while you're making it. But I don't like you driving.
What do you mean?
Pull over. I'm driving this heap back to the city.
No.
I said pull over.
I won't let you do it. I don't care what happens.
Take it easy. You want to kill us both?
Sure, I will kill us both. We die together or we live together. Yes or no?
You're nuts.
Answer me.
The answer is no.
Bueno, you will see I mean what I say.
Fog thinned out just as we rounded a bend in the road. There was a point ahead with a sheer 300-foot drop to the sea. She jerked the car away from the pavement and steered straight at it. I grabbed the wheel and twisted it. The car skidded on gravel and slid sideways toward the cliff. I got the door open and tried to yank her out with me. She held on and kicked me until I rolled free. Didn't look very beautiful when I saw her for the last time. And the flashy convertible was a pile of junk. Very expensive junk, but junk all the same. I understand the federal men have confiscated the platinum and are holding Lovelace for questioning. I doubt if he'll crack. Nobody can embarrass a used car salesman. Period. End of report.
Sam, do you really like this racket we're in?
I hate it.
So do I. But don't let ever go into any other racket.
It's a promise, sweetheart. Why, I'll never know.
Don't eat. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, was written for radio by Bob Tolman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Tonight's program was directed by Elliot Lewis.
Elliot Lewis, Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett, good stuff to start things off here on Erie House Radio.
Yep, and we have a double moral. We can each take one here.
Oh, why not? One needs this, first of all. You're prepared. You go first. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar, done by Dave.
Apologies to Gar. A platinum record plays easily on a record player. Not so much with a platinum car. Or...
Or?
That would be you.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, or I would have to have been ready.
Cars don't make good... Cars don't make for good coffins. The insurance premiums are a killer.
Ooh. There you go. Double slim.
Double
the slim is always a good time. There you go.
Here we go.
It's our first tale. And
that is indeed, I always love Howard Duff. I love what he does, you know, and I don't think I've seen him do anything. I remember tuning in fairly regular to see the Felony Squad that he starred in, and that Twilight Zone episode he's in, A World of His Own. He was in a couple of he was all over the place on radio. You could hear him. Doesn't always build properly, but you know, one of my many favorite Arch Oblers. He was in the Immortal Gentleman, but the one about the plane that a special to Hollywood. Where it went up
yes.
in the air and the engine stopped. We have shared that here on Erie House.
Yes.
All you have to do is go to the archives and look up Special to Hollywood.
It.
Huh? What?
And good luck finding it.
Oh,
David,
we can
shows
help
to look through.
Yeah, we can help them out there. Let me see.
That's
Let's
true.
Let's see what we got here. And go up front. Ah, there it is. Episode Erie House number 125. And that was on the Howard Duff night. Howard Duff
that
weekend.
That was a few minutes ago.
That was a Saturday show, number 125. And had special to Hollywood. Howard Duff on the Head of Hopper show and Howard Duff on Philco Radio Time. So there you go.
I wonder when we aired it, by chance.
It was November 25th of 1917. I tried 20
wow.
and 17. 20 and 17.
20 and 17. That was our first year of Erie House Radio. How about that?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, good old Bob. That is Indian Love Call.
Yep. There's a lot of great, I know Houlihan and Big Chuck used to show feature behind them in the Cherokee's version. One of my favorites is Ray Stevens' version.
Oh, gosh. This stuff is great.
Which they also featured in one of their skits, The Sound Effects Man. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now we're going to have we got lots of entertainment for you tonight. Okay, first, it's Devil Dust. Theater 5 with 3 morals, which I'll be ready for.
But before that, why don't we take a history lesson?
I suppose it's time to go back, way back, back into time.
Gotta find a woman.
Oh, another... Look back in time with Ugh, the caveman.
You know, funny thing about inventions is that they're only good for a certain period of time. What I mean by this is that an invention or innovation of an invention makes it more practical than the original one, or a more friendly version that comes along that's completely different, which makes the first invention useless or obsolete. Case in point are the inventions of the mimeograph, the buggy whip, the Betamax, the telegraph, the pager, the vacuum tube, and laser discs. I could go on and on about the subject matter for many pages, but I am allocated for just so many words per story, and the word allocated cost me an extra word all by itself. So I think that it would be safe to say that there is no invention in all of time that has ever stayed in its original form and is still used today. Save for one, and that is something that was invented by the greatest inventor of all times, Ugg the caveman. It all goes back to caveman days when the main eating utensils were fingers. That's true. I'm sorry, I was at the right point there. We'll start that sentence once again. It all goes back to the caveman days when it was eat or being eaten, and there was a lot of eating going on. Men would eat plants, plants would eat men, men would eat wild beasts would eat men, men would eat men. Only one man would eat men. That was Urk the caveman, and he would later sell his life story to the Ice Age Times, but never lived long enough to become a movie of the week. Back in caveman days, the main eating utensils were fingers, partly because fingers were so handy, but also because no utensils for eating had yet been invented. And fingers were fine for most cavemen, as they could easily eat plants and berries with their fingers. This brings us to Gore, the cave clan chef. The cave people would come from many cave clans away to purchase food made by Gore. Gore was famous for his egg drop soup. What Gore would do would be to drop an egg into an iron pot of water heated by the fire. As Gore would push the egg around the pot with his stirring stick, it would change the taste from water to that of the eggshell. The taste was not real good, but it was different than water. One day, Gore accidentally dropped an egg into the heated iron pot, which had no water in it, and the egg broke open. As Gore tried to scrape the broken egg out of the pot, it fluffed up and became yellow. At this point, you could say that Gore had invented scrambled eggs, but this was not to be, because the fluffy yellow egg stuff disgusted Gore, and he threw it away, and he would never make it again. Scrambled eggs would have to wait for another day. Gore's next food creation was that of the cave beetle surprise. The surprise was that the cave beetles were still alive. Gore figured that since cave beetles had been around millions of years before man, and there were so many of them, that the cave beetles were healthy, and therefore, a health food. The problem with the beetles was that they would just crawl out of the bowl instead of courteously waiting to be eaten. Now, caveman could use his fingers to eat the cave beetles, but Gore considered fingers to be unsanitary, which would destroy the healthfulness of the cave beetle, and there was no sense in eating unhealthy, healthy food. It was this problem that Gore brought to Ugg, how to eat the healthy, moving cave beetles without using his fingers. First thing Ugg did try to do was to grab the beetles with Gore's stirring stick, but that would only mash the beetles with most of the healthful beetle parts stuck to the bottom of the bowl. The next attempt occurred when Ugg whittled down the stirring end of the stick to a fine point using a sharp stone. After many attempts, Ugg was able to stab one of the beetles without spilling its insides. This worked, but all the attempts made this more like exercise than a fine dining experience. After more attempts, Ugg realized that if he had multiple points at one time, his chance of catching the healthful beetle would rise tremendously. So Ugg went to the land of the green trees to find the perfect stick to make many points at one time. Finding this perfect stick, Ugg whittled the four sharp points that all evened out at its end. Yes, Ugg had just invented the fork. It was spelled F-O-U-R-K because of the four pointed prongs, and the K was added at the end because Ugg was a terrible speller. Using his fork, Ugg had increased his chances by three to catch a beetle on the end, sometimes catching more than one, and it was now ready to present to the cave clan. It was a great disappointment to Gore, the cave chef, that people did not want to eat cave beetle surprise. This was because the cave people had adopted cave beetles as pets, and they didn't want to eat any of their pets' relatives. They were, however, intrigued with Ugg's fork, which would allow them to eat much faster, giving them more time to hunt for more food. Through many generations and misinterpretations, fork, F-O-U-R-K, was changed to F-O-R-K. And there have been many attempts to improve upon the fork over the ages, but only one, the spork, ever made it to market. The materials made that it made with changed over time, but the fork with its original four even prongs is still used today in every home and restaurant, making it the only invention of all time to stay in its original form. And it all comes from Ugg the caveman, the greatest inventor of all time.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Ugg. So that's where those forking things came from.
That's where it came from. Yep. It was originally spelled F-O-U-R-K. Yep.
Well, like you said, cavemen don't know how to spell, so...
And if you didn't know how to spell, we'd be eating with a spoon and a four, you know, and that, I don't know that sounds good.
Yep. Hey, that Ugg music's pretty uplifting. It's pretty pretty exciting.
It can be, yes.
So now you know, folks. Now you know. It's like a documentary tonight. I don't... Onward to Theater 5. Devil Dust. Mm-hmm. I'll bet it was broadcast in the 60s or something.
It was. Or something. Yeah. All right. It does come to us from January 5 of 1960 and 5.
I'll be darned.
When I was driving through the Southwest, through the desert country, I saw this car by an old shack. It was a big, beautiful car, all polished and shining in this strange, out-of-the-way place. Now, what did an old Indian want with a fancy car like that? A car that he didn't even drive.
Theater 5 presents Devil Dust.
You think we wouldn't make it?
When I dozed off before, I dreamt we were stranded on the desert.
Oh, not so loud, Jula. We ain't home yet.
Oh, I apologize if I hurt your engine feelings. It did get us to Deming and back. But, Harvey, you don't mind an old telling you that you need a new...
Yeah, I need a new everything. But I can't afford it, Jula.
Harvey.
Yeah?
We've got company behind us. Get over. Get over.
Jim, dumb, blasted idiot.
California, please.
You'll wear that car out in no time.
Harvey, stop.
Crazy. Just crazy. Stops in the middle of the road.
Look, he's running up to the car parked behind that shack. Isn't that old John Eagle's place?
Yeah.
Why, he's opening the car door. He's poking around inside it. Oh, Harvey, don't you want to see what he's doing?
Not if Vaughn's home.
Well, he's not home, or those dogs of his would have torn into that fellow as soon as he touched the car. Wait. Let's see what happens. Or are you afraid John might come back and see you?
I don't want him thinking I had anything to do with this.
You're afraid of that old man. You believe in Indian magic.
No, I didn't say that at all. He was a big medicine man back on the reservation. And I seen those Navajo medicine men do things with people. No, sir.
Maybe we'll tell the sheriff.
What
that fellow wants to steal the car.
Yeah, I doubt there's a battery in it. John never drives it.
Then why? Why would a California tourist be interested?
Yeah. You could ask Tommy.
Tommy?
Ah, you women. Here you got old John's own grandson clerking in your store.
Tommy Tyandy?
Sure.
Why, yes, so he is. Somehow I never thought he in connection with John and the Navajos. He's a good boy. I like him, but...
But what?
A feeling I get when he looks at me sometimes.
That's Junjun. Look, I grew up around Navajo Indians, both kinds, blanket wearers and the English speaking. For all that I've seen them every day in my life, I still don't understand a thing about them. Not a blasted thing. Dena, they call themselves. Dena the people. And Dena is different. Indians are different.
Mrs. Granger, I was just wondering when you'd be back.
Something the matter, Tommy?
The cook came in from the Thompson Ranch and took the last of those canned Freestone peaches.
I'll order more. Tommy, when Harvey Tibbetts and I were driving past your grandfather's house, we saw a stranger looking around that old car your grandfather keeps near the Arroyo. Is there something special about that car?
I don't go up to my grandfather's house, Mrs. Granger. I don't know.
Oh.
If you got a minute... I'd like to talk to you.
Sure, go right ahead.
Could see your way clear to paying me $5 a week more. I'd keep the store open till 10 every night if you wanted.
You could keep it open till midnight, Tommy. We wouldn't do any more business. This is too small a store, and Devil Dust is too small a town for me to be able to pay you any more than I'm paying you right now. Oh, Tommy, you've had 2 years of high school. You're a smart boy. Why don't you see what you can get in a bigger town, huh?
I know what Indians... I know what I could get. It's not much. Mrs. Granger, when I leave here, I want to go a long ways. I want to go clear across the country, away from sheep raising and bitter roots and starving.
You mean leave your people?
Well, they can't help me. I can't go back on the reservation. I just can't go backwards. I have to go forward. I want to stretch out to my limits. So when I'm old... At least I'll know I've tried everything I could.
You want to get away from here?
Yes. And I need money to do it.
Oh, I wish I could help you find yourself, Tommy. But that extra $5 a week is just impossible. You know what this store makes.
I guess I do, Mrs. Granger. You want me to write down the order for the peaches?
Yes, Tommy. Thank you. Somebody's pulling in at Harvey Tibbetts' place. Why, it's him. It's the man who was poking around your grandfather's car. Must be taking a cabin to stay here. But why?
I brought you some glasses, Mr. Farmer.
Oh, thanks. Listen, Tibbetts, what's wrong with that old Indian who owns the car? I went up to see him, didn't try to pressure him, but it was no sale. When I finally gave up, when I left the price open, you know what he said? He said he didn't understand me because I didn't speak Navajo.
Yeah, Mr. Farman, Indians have to do things their way. And if you don't understand their way, well, you have to wait them out, especially Navajos. They're buyers, not sellers. You don't let anything go, not even words.
Smart, huh?
Hmm.
You suppose he knows what he has right there in his backyard?
What? What's so special about that old car?
Now listen, Tibbetts. It is an old car, but a very special make and a very special year. Supercharged Cord 1936. It cost plenty bucks back then when they were hard to come by. You know why?
Hmm.
Because it was a handmade car. The parts hand-turned. That's the reason they only made about five of those coupes in 1936. It was too expensive, too much ahead of the times. Only five for this whole country, Tibbetts. And that old Indian has one of them.
Hmm. Say, what would you do with it?
Are you for real? It's a money car, I told you. It's a collector's item. I could sell it, or I could take all the prizes at the car shows. That car has class. That car is status on wheels. I want it.
Well, what if old John Eagle won't sell it to you?
I'm not even listening. He'll sell because I'll find a way to make him sell. Oh, come in, kid. Come in. You're right on time.
Hello, Tommy.
Hello, Mr. Tibbetts. Hello, Mr. Fireman.
We met this afternoon, Tibbetts, before I went up to see Tommy's grandfather. Get me some ice, will you, Tibbetts?
Sure. You didn't have much luck with grandfather.
How do you know?
I tried to tell you, Mr. Fireman. You went in with 3 strikes against you. My grandfather, he didn't know you. You probably asked his name. You looked in his eyes when you spoke to him. Maybe even pointed your finger at him.
Yeah, I think I did.
That's it. The old-fashioned Navajos, like my grandfather, they don't like those things. Taboo.
And, you? Are you an old-fashioned Navajo?
I don't know what I am. Not much of anything. My grandfather and me, we don't get on so well just because of his old-time ideas.
But you're still speaking to him.
When I see him.
How much do you make in that grocery, kid? If you can talk your grandfather into selling his car to me, this 50 is yours.
Oh, I don't make that kind of money.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you say?
I don't know.
You could go a long way on 50 bucks. Get some decent clothes, buy a ticket out of this town, buy a suitcase like this one. You like it? Leather-grained, brass-buckled.
It's beautiful.
I'll throw it in for goodwill. That's the kind of business I do. 50 and the suitcase. Well, come on. What are you, afraid to stand up to your old grandfather?
Well, my grandfather thinks that car is beautiful, Mr. Fireman. He loves it. He works on it. He keeps it up. It makes him a big man with the Navajos. The reason up there near the arroyo is he doesn't want it to get dusty near the road.
But he doesn't drive it, does he?
No.
Then it isn't doing him any good. He'd be better off with a pickup truck. Help him, help yourself at the same time. What do you say?
Well, I'm thinking it over, but I
just happen to have a bottle of bourbon, almost as old as your grandfather. It's in the suitcase. Open it up, Tommy. And remember, that case is yours with the 50 if... Hey, how do you like that case, huh?
Oh, it's so smooth, so clean.
Here's your ice.
Oh, thanks, Tibbetts.
I'm not much for drinking.
Oh, this time you'll make an exception.
Mr. Fireman, I don't think Tommy should...
Oh, what is this? No fire water for the Redskins? Come off it. We're in the modern world. Tommy might as well learn to drink. He'll be able to afford it.
Good old Bob's car has 5 computers, a cell phone, Sirius XM, and GPS, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi too. Ah, but does it have an ashtray? No, they don't put ashtrays in cars anymore. It's terrible.
They do not. Yeah.
It's terrible.
But they will still put in cigarette lighters.
I don't think they have the cigarette lighters. They have the port.
They have the port, yes, because people use that to charge things and run things from their car, yes.
And they're much different. Oh, my gosh. I remember burning my finger on those things. Woo! They get hot. They got hot.
Ouch, yeah, you ouch, pushed ouch, it in, and then ouch, when it ouch. Popped out, it was good and hot and ready to light your cigarette, which I never had. Yeah.
Or your fingertip.
Or your fingertip. It does work that way, too.
If you're a bit klutzy. But,
Yep.
So the old man has a nifty car, a collector's car.
Yeah. One of the only 5 that either that exist left in the country. Yeah. Yeah. The old Indian couldn't understand because the guy didn't speak. He said, I don't understand you because you don't speak Navajo. But he told him in English. I like it.
Gotta love that. You don't speak Navajo, I don't understand you. There you go. Well, let's wrap up Theater 5. We're going to have time for more stuff, too.
It gets more interesting as we go.
Yep. And here we go with Devil Dust, Part 2. Part 2.
kid. A whole day lost while he sobers up, and the old man must know it was me that got him drunk. Well, who'd expect him to go up there the night and make a scene?
He wanted the money pretty bad. Yeah, I guess you'll have to give up on that car, Mr. Fireman. You'll never get it now.
That's where you're wrong. I'm a guy who sees what he wants and goes after it. Ask anybody in L.A. about Mark Fireman in business. I don't back down. That's my reputation.
How?
Just take my word. I've got the tow bar ready home with me, that big, beautiful baby doll cord coupe. You're not a car collector, Tibbetts, but I tell you, this is something special. Only five in the country, and one belongs to me.
Mr. Fireman, you don't have the car.
Tibbetts, you're starting to annoy me. Now, take that long pen of yours someplace else. I'll have the car by this time tomorrow, and you can make book on it.
I don't think you can do it.
You got a couple of dollars to back up that opinion? Yeah, I thought not. You don't look like a sport.
Hello? Hello, Harvey. Of course it's me. What? Now, Harvey, slow down. I don't understand. Would Tommy steal his grandfather's car if he was offered enough money? Well, just now I think he would. But why do you think he's going to try? Oh? Harvey, we can't let that happen. It'd spoil the boy's life and what's left of his grandfather's. No, I won't let it happen. Your dogs, call them off, please.
Hiya! Hiya!
Thanks. Eagle, I'm Mrs. Granger from the grocery store. Your grandson Tommy works for me. I'm a friend of his. You understand me?
Yes.
The man who got Tommy drunk has offered him more money to steal your car from you tonight. You better hide the car keys.
I leave them indoors.
No, I don't think you understand me. How can I make it clear?
Clear.
Then why did you say that about the keys? You can't want him to steal your car.
Good night, Azansozi.
Azansozi?
Woman who is too thin. Go home now, Azansozi, friend of Tommy. I give you thanks.
But what about Tommy?
Too cold outside at night. Go home. Get warm.
John Eagle! Oh, he didn't understand me. I know he didn't understand me.
Quiet, boy. Quiet. Grandfather!
Why didn't you tell me you wanted to go riding in car, grandson? It is not too late. Get in. I will drive you as far as you want to go.
I...
Get in. Sit beside me.
I don't want to go riding. I mean, you can't start the car now. Not in the dark. It's too close to the edge of the arroyo.
What did you want to do then?
Just to sit in the car for a while.
Then we will do that. Now. Now we have shut out light. Once in a dark time like this, I rode in Canyon Ducelli. I found myself near Spider Rock. You remember stories I told you about that place when you were small?
I remember. You released the brake. Put it back. Grandfather, we're moving. We're rolling.
But very slowly. It is heavy car. Now, why are you here?
I told you, I just wanted to sit in the car.
Yes, you said that. Now, tell me about Spider Rock.
On top of the rock, a monster spider lives. Please stop the car. We'll go into the arroyo. All right, food of the spider on Spider Rock is bad Navajos.
And foolish ones.
Yes, and foolish ones. So all with bad conscience stay away from Spider Rock. Grandfather, that's a 60-foot drop down there. We'll be killed. Please, I only wanted to sit in the car.
We will sit then until end.
Put on the brake.
3 times you have lied. 4th lie will surround you and close your escape.
I wanted to steal it. I came to steal the car. I'm sorry. He offered me so much money.
He offered me money, too.
Grandfather, look. We're right on the edge. The front wheels are almost over.
Then get out on my side of car and be careful.
Careful. Careful.
Now, did you learn anything this evening, my grandson?
I think so.
I also learned pride kept us apart. I have left you alone too long. You do not know who you are.
I'm not much of anything.
Wrong. You are one of us. Dina, one of the people. We will forget tonight completely.
Grandfather, what are you doing? Get away from the car.
Car, too much trouble.
Don't let the brake go. You lose your car.
Terrence, where are you?
Right here, Mr. Farman. Oh, you're leaving now?
Yeah, here's your key.
Tommy and I are right sorry to see you go away mad.
You're a dope, Tibbetts. And you, kid, are a double-dyed dope. You let your grandfather smash up my court coupe just to get even with me.
He didn't want to do it. It hurt him. But you had spoiled the car for him. He couldn't love it anymore.
Then why couldn't he have done it by selling it to me? Why did he have... Oh, what's the use?
Mad.
Yeah.
I should have taken him up on that bet he made me that he'd get the car. You can't gamble on what a Navajo will do. Oh, Tommy, you left his suitcase. Isn't that the one he said you could have? Take it.
I don't want it.
Why not?
If he doesn't value it, then why should I?
Hey. That's the first Indian remark I ever heard you make. Yes, sir. That's a real Indian remark.
Why?
I don't understand it.
Don't give up. You stay here long enough, you'll be Indian too.
Presented Devil Dust, written by Phyllis Cole and directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, George Petrie, Peter Fernandez, Abby Lewis, John D. Seymour, and Humphrey Davis. Audio engineer Marty Folia. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastatsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Ted Bell. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking.
Thank you, Fred Foy. Job well done.
As always, yes.
Well, that was an interesting ending.
It was an interesting ending. It's not one that I expected at all. Again, the thing that for the Theater 5 that I recently found out, that really it was not about airing at 5 o'clock. It was supposed to be aired at 10 o'clock because of the adult nature of the stories. If this were for the kiddos, you wouldn't have the car going over the cliff.
Uh-oh. Our kids like that.
Today they do, yeah. They've been shocked, I think, back then. But, yeah. So.
Oh, I would have liked it. In 65, oh, yeah. Drive a car off a cliff. I'm all for it.
One of only five? I mean, come on. You're not filming Louise. Jeez.
No, I don't want to be in the car. I just want to be an observer. There we go.
Yeah, because in that car, if you were in that car, you'd be a hood ornament at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Pick you up with a sponge. All right, let's learn a little something here, shall we? Erie House Radio proudly presents three garrulous morals of the story, performed by Dale and Dave. Uh-oh. With apologies to Gar, you can fool a fool. The fool knows, but can't explain it. Or, Dave.
Remove the P from pride, and you can take it anywhere. Or.
Or, deception isn't a game. It's an argument with yourself. Or.
Ooh. Oh, another one.
You can never win an argument with yourself because the better man always wins.
Eeny, meeny, chili, beeny, the spirits are about to speak.
There we go. This is a little bonus.
Yeah, I usually win my own arguments, so, you know.
Do you? With yourself?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Oh, I can't.
I didn't say it was a good result. I just said I win my arguments with myself.
I can't, because sometimes the arguments get physical, and it's self-defeating.
Oh, well, I never let mine get that physical. I never let it go that far, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, it's pretty bad. It's in here, so.
Well, I can see why you would give up and not want yourself to hurt you, you know?
No, yeah. I like me, so I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, I think I'm going to spin the wheel.
Okay.
Why not?
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
And now, the Cretchford Braid and Tassel Company invites you to share another nostalgic interlude in the lives of the Pittmans.
The Great Depression swept across the land when I was a young boy growing up amid the prairie of Oklahoma. And in many ways, my family suffered more than most, for my father was a simple farmer. In good years, he sometimes harvested 1,000 bushels of dust from the land. But in bad years, the crop often ran to 5,000 bushels or more. Still, there were happy times as well. One day in particular stands out quite vividly in my recollection. I had just received an important letter in the mail, and as I hurried into the house to tell my parents about it, my young heart was racing.
Hey, Ma. Hey, Pa. I just received an important letter in the mail, and my young heart is racing.
Well, now you just lie down on the floor and rest for a little while, Jimmy Joe. The shock of getting that bad news will pass after your mother's made you some bitterroot tea.
Oh, this isn't bad news by a long shot, Pa. It's from that school for creative writers I saw advertised on a matchbook cover. I sent them a sample of my best childish scribbling for their free appraisal, and they say I'm so good that they're offering me a scholarship to take their home study course.
Well, I think that's wonderful, Jimmy Joe. We've always wanted you children to go on to a higher education, even beyond the sixth grade, if we could afford it.
Oh, this is a lot higher than that, Ma. My new school will mail me a diploma suitable for framing once I graduate. And the complete course of 10 lessons only costs $40.
Well, I know you've got your heart set on becoming a famous writer when you grow up, Jimmy Joe, and I sure want you to enroll in this fine school. But Why do you have to pay $40 if they're giving you a free scholarship?
Oh, they explain that in the letter, Pa. The money is just to cover the school's cost of handling and mailing. Usually they charge an extra $5 for tuition. But I'm so gifted, they're not making me pay any of that.
Well, it would be a terrible shame to let an opportunity like this go by. But $40 is a lot of money to raise. We might get as much as 15 by selling the truck. But I'm afraid your grandmother would have to go back to work at the lard rendering plant to help scrape up the rest.
Well, I know you promised Grandma she could take things easier now that she's past 90. But this is a real worthy cause. Just listen to this great sample of my writing that I sent to the school, and they praise so highly. Here's how it goes. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can't you hear their paddles clunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay.
Just hold on right there, Jimmy Joe. I'm inclined to wonder about the professors at that school, if this is the poem you sent them to win your scholarship. And I don't want to sell the truck unless I'm sure you'd be getting a first-rate education from teachers with good sense. So, why don't you just throw away that letter you got and then go off to bed, son?
Well, okay, if you're sure that's in my best interest. Good night, Pa. Good night, Ma.
Good night, Jimmy Joe. Good night, Uncle Kermit.
Good night, Roy Boy. Good night, ladies of the Rebecca Lodge.
Good night, baby Lucille. Good night, Grandpa.
Good night, Shirley Temple. Good night, Jane Withers, before she became a lady plumber.
Good night, everybody upstairs. Good night, Jimmy Joe.
Good night, Ma. Good night, Newt Rockne of Notre Dame.
And in the years ahead, I was destined never to receive a diploma suitable for framing. But among the ignorant and unschooled members of my family, I was always treated as an equal.
Good night, Buck Jones. Good night, Bobby Jones.
My brothers and sisters and I remain a closely knit group to this day, even though our old farmhouse is gone, and I've long since lost track of where everybody went.
Good night, wall sockets. Good night, ceiling fixture.
In my memory, we are still together as we were then, and neither the passing of the years nor the endless miles that separate us can ever wipe out those happy recollections of my boyhood.
This week's episode of The Pittmans has been brought to you by the Crutchfoot Braid and Tassel Company, maker of fine doodads to improve the looks of your shabby home. Perhaps you're dreaming at this very moment of new gold fringe to dress up your souvenir pillow from Yellowstone National Park. Why not make that dream a reality by rushing to your local dealer and shouting, Crutchfoot? And don't forget to join us again soon for another story of nostalgic warmth in the lives of the Pittmans.
This is the year of the lark. The lark is the car of the year. Look what's new for you from the lark. It's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. It's the new convertible. Seats five adults in style. It's so pert and perky. Runs on pennies per mile.
The Lark by Studebaker. Yours in six stunning styles for 60, including the new convertible and...
Look what else is new for you. It's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. It's a new Lark wagon with four convenient doors. And it's styled for fun and frolic, but it's built for chores.
Look at the Lark yourself. Learn how it's been proven by 750 million miles of owner use. Visit your Studebaker dealer and see how nothing has been spared to build quality into the Lark. Discover why it's the value car of the year.
The Lark is the car of the year.
Wouldn't you like to receive, absolutely free, a brand new Chevrolet 6, any model you want? All right, listen to this. Starting tomorrow is a feature of National Drive a Chevrolet Month. One of those big, fine-looking Chevrolet 6s will be given away every day, absolutely free. 30 days, 30 cars, one car awarded every day. All you have to do is to visit any Chevrolet dealer, drive or ride in a Chevrolet car, then down on the entry blank, which the dealer will furnish, the reason why you like the new Chevrolet 6. Remember, in order to enter the contest, you must visit a Chevrolet dealer, get a demonstration, and obtain an entry blank from him. It doesn't matter how many or how few words you use or what kind of writer you are. The best reasons for liking the new Chevrolet, the best in the opinions of the judges, win the free Chevrolet cars. This opportunity is for any person in the United States over 18 years of age, and one day makes you eligible for any of the cars given away from the day you enter throughout the balance of the month. So plan now to go to your Chevrolet dealer tomorrow and enter this contest. Your name may be announced over the radio next Friday night as one of the winners of a new Chevrolet 6.
Thanks, Frank. That was swell.
I'm glad you liked it, Harry.
You know, you're a darn good-looking fellow. I'll bet you have lots of girls crazy about you.
Oh, I don't know.
You're just being modest. But tell me, how do you feel when you're in love?
How do I feel? My gosh, Harry, it's the most wonderful feeling in the world. Why, when I'm in love, I'm just breezing along with the breeze. I never mind the bumps or the ruts along the highway of life. I float through life on a cloud.
And that, folks, is exactly the way you feel in the famous Dodge Air Glide ride. If you haven't experienced this thrill, visit the showroom of your local Dodge dealer. See for yourself the extra value you get in this big, new, money-saving Dodge. Believe me, folks, it certainly is more car for less money. Think of it. The new Dodge Beauty Winner of 1936 now sells for only $640 and up. List prices at Factory Detroit.
Say, that is something, Harry. But how about you singing a song now?
Don't mind if I do.
I mind. You're not singing, Harry. So as far as next week, there's nothing. This is our very last show of March 2024, because next week on Friday at 4:30, we're just surviving. It's survival shows all weekend long. Mysterious Traveler, Family Theater, and Crisis. That's Friday. And then Saturday, CBS Radio Mystery Theater. How about that, Dave? Dave? Yoo-hoo, Dave.
That sounds like fun.
Oh, there we go. Thought I lost you for a moment there. All right.
Actually, I had accidentally bumped my mute button, so yes.
Ah. And in about 8 minutes, you can jump on over to the Twitches and catch Gar the Ghoul.
That's true. Do we have time for me to slide a wooden nickel into the jukebox?
We do indeed.
Well, in that case, I'm going to slide this wooden nickel, reach over and slide it into the slot to see what it brings up.
Now that we've gathered us a few hot killer cycles, let's kindle us something, With the Pied Pipers and myself, with a number dedicated to the nylon shortage. I'm going to dance with the dolly with her hole in her stocking. I was walking down the street. Met somebody who was mighty sweet, mighty fair to see. I asked her, would she like to have a talk, make some talk. All the fellas standing on the wall, wishing they were me. Mama, mama, let me dress up tonight. I've got a secret, gonna fess up tonight. Gonna dance by the light of the moon. Gonna dance with a dolly with a hole in a stocking, while her knees keep a knocking and her toes keep a rocking. Dance with a dolly with a hole in a stocking by the light of the moon.
Walking down the street, met somebody who was mighty sweet, mighty fair to see. I asked her, would she like to talk, have a walk, make some talk. All the fellas standing on the wall, wishing they were me. Mama, put the cat off tonight. Gonna swing out right, get all night, and I won't be home till dark. Gonna dance with a dolly with a hole in her stocking, while her knees keep a knocking and her toes keep a rocking. Dance with a dolly with a hole in her stocking by the light of the moon.
Got more kisses than a candy store, candy store, candy store. Sweeter than I've ever had before. I'll keep crying for more.
Gonna dance with a dolly, a real life dolly. She's got a hole in her stocking, while our knees are knocking and our toes keep a rocking.
Dance with a dolly with a hole in a stocking, while her knees keep a knocking, toes keep rocking.
Dance by the light of the moon.
with you around. There's spring in my heart. I don't need my raccoon, 'cause everything's fine as long as you're mine. There's spring in my heart. I know why I'm merry, humming love's old tune. Even in January, honey, it feels like June. There's frost on the moon, but what do I care? I don't know it's there. There's spring in my heart. Let the breezes blow. Who cares how they blow? I know, you know, I'll still be loving you so. Let the night be clear, and let those clouds appear. I won't mind it, how I find it, dear. There's frost on the moon and snow on the ground, but with you around, there's spring in my heart. And I don't need my raccoon, 'cause everything's fine just as long as you're mine. There's spring in my heart. I know why I'm merry, why I'm humming love's old tune. Even in January, honey, it feels like June. There's frost on the moon, yeah, but what do I care? I don't even know it's there, 'cause there's spring in my heart.
Yes, indeed. Easter tomorrow, don't leave, if the Easter bunny leaves you raisins, don't eat them. Okay? Don't
That's one thing you have
any
to care
raisins
of.
Left by the Easter bunny. They're horrible. Trust me.
I wore a shirt, an Easter shirt for work on Friday. It said, hand over the eggs and nobody gets hoit.
There you go. I do like making me some deviled eggs, though. I have a special mustard I mix with the egg yolks and a little miracle whip. And mix that all together, splooch it back into those hard-boiled eggs, and a sprinkle of paprika, and it's got to be the good Hungarian stuff, too.
Hungarian eggs?
No, Hungarian paprika.
Oh, Hungarian paprika. Okay.
There is no other paprika. It needs to be Hungarian.
Ah.
Hard to find.
That's what it takes.
Ever since the pandemic, it's been very hard to find real Hungarian paprika.
We have to go up to the East Side Market, did you? Or the West Side Market?
No, there's a couple stores that'll have it once in a while, very small canisters of it. But the wife went and ordered some online and got a big sack of it, you know.
There you go.
That and some Cowboy Kent. Cowboy Kent, we have no problem getting Cowboy Kent in the mail. That's
okay.
Good stuff. Check him out on YouTube. He's a cool dude. Cowboy Kent Rollins. And he makes good stuff, too, if you like outdoor cooking. But thanks again, everyone who stopped in. Snowman James, Fogsbane, CW, good old Bob. Who was that? Dalak? I don't know, something like that. And WRBM Dave, thank you all for joining us here on Erie House.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Damn. I'm gonna really dig that one. The Hungarian paprika.
Yeah, Hungarian paprika. It's the good stuff. Spanish paprika is like red sand by comparison.
Red sand. Ooh, okay.
Red sand.
I've had that before. Yeah.
Have you? Yes, last time I was on Mars, I had some red sand, and it was in my shoes.
Mouthful, whole mouthful. Yeah.
Whole
mouthful, yeah.
Oh, forgot to do shameless promotions. Oh, well.
I didn't have any this week.
Nothing this week?
I did this week.
Well, nah. It's probably, at least we shamelessly promoted Gar a few times. That's always good.
Well, I shamelessly promoted my movie last week, and they were running two formats, and they didn't run the right format, so they got an old rerun of mine instead of the new show, so they have to reschedule that whenever they're going to reschedule it.
Cool. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, what?
Emergency broadcast system. Twitch.
Uh-oh.
Oh, he's starting off just now. There you go. Well, my good friend, have a wonderful holiday with your family.
And you as well. Yeah, I have one of my volunteers come over and dine with us tomorrow.
Ah, that's good.
My wife decided she's going to make it nice and easy. She's going to make an Easter meatloaf.
An Easter meatloaf, why not?
Why not indeed?
Why not? We're doing the same old boring, it's not boring, we love it, ham, you know, like a glazed ham. And then kielbasa, real ethnic stuff. Denise made a wonderful pasta salad from scratch with lots of veggies in it. It's got like a lot of peppers and cucumber and onion.
She's trying to do. She's trying to ruin it. What?
No.
Vegetable.
Oh, you gotta have a few. And that's
you say
about
so.
It. Oh, and of course my deviled eggs. And my deviled eggs.
Yeah.
Her pasta there salad also has hard boiled egg slices on the top. Good stuff. And also smattered with paprika. When you're married to someone who has Hungarian in their blood and good ethnic Hungarian cooking in their background, that you must have. It is a must have in your pantry. You must have real Hungarian paprika. Yeah. Even our chicken soup, it's almost orange.
Wow.
Well, it was once. We went a little nuts with the paprika, but
okay.
Anywho,
there's a place over here called New Era Restaurant, not far from my house, and they have that Hungarian paprika. That stuff is pretty wild. I don't know.
It can be. It can be.
Well, there's this. I don't mind a little bit of curry, but man, their paprika is something else.
Yeah. Now, Hungarian, I wouldn't say it's spicy, but it definitely has a flavor that you know is there. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's why I cannot eat their chicken paprikash. Now, the wife isn't crazy. She likes chicken paprikash, but not theirs because it's more Hungarian, where she grew up more with the Polish version.
Oh yeah.
So they definitely have a different taste.
Yes. It's like stuffed cabbages. Everybody makes them a little bit different. Or stuffed peppers. They're all different.
Yeah.
Meatloaf too. Some people it's horrible, and some people it's like steak. You know, it's so good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, it's funny how different people make things differently, different meals.
Yeah, it's funny how you make the same thing, but coming from a different country, it just is a little different creature, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like the a ravioli is the same thing as a stuffed dumpling over in Asia.
Okay.
There's all kind. You know, it's the same thing. It's like a pierogi. It's basically dough wrapped around meat. But all these different countries have different wrinkles of the same food. It's kind of cool. That's why there's something to our theory about world peace with ice cream, because food brings people together. Yes, it does.
It does bring people together. And ice cream, you know, if you eat enough of it, you can get an ice cream headache, or it can make you so cold that you agree to anything just to get warm, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I wonder if... who discovered ice cream, I wonder?
Well, part of the time of man was during the Ice Age, so I'll have to see about that.
Yeah, I wonder. It's possible. It could happen. Anyhow, I think I am going to hit the bricks.
All right, sir.
And
flip over to Gar here myself, and I thank you, sir, for letting me share my story as lousily as I told it, but I thank you for letting me share it.
What are you talking about? It was it was an epic. It was a documentary of days gone by.
It was a little longer than the usual one, but I think it had to work up to that point. That's all.
That's okay. It was great. It was great. Now we know where the fork came from. Life is good.
You do know where the fork came from. Yes. No question about it. Okay, some questions, but, you know, we basically know what happened. There we go.
That's right. All right, let's drag in the great one.
We should turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, so into the middle light, spotlight, the great, the one, the only, Jimmy Durante shall step in.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. What more to say but good night?
Yeah.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Marry for what we say, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Ink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Night already!
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week, when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.